Hope everybody is doing their best right now as we're going through this crazy time in our world. I'm Tony Bruschi, host of Real Ghost Stories Online. Wanted to invite you and let you know about our other brand new podcast that we just launched, Help Kill the Time for You. It's called The Dark Side of Wikipedia. It's about true crime and dark history. We dive into some of the strangest, most disturbed minds and experiences from our history and examine their story, their Wikipedia entry, and then discuss the cases, the individuals, and the psychology of the events as we go through each and every story. Some of our first episodes include Ed Gein, the BTK killer, the New London school explosion, Amityville murders, Richard Speck, Amelia Dyer, the General Slocum disaster, Jeffrey Dahmer, and more. New episodes every single week. Check out Dark Side of Wikipedia. Search it. Subscribe wherever you download podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and more. It's available now with new episodes every single week. Dark Side of Wikipedia. Search and subscribe today and stay safe out there. What do you do when an unknown presence appears to you while alone in your own home? That's the question we ask today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. You can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. Or, of course, support the program. That's the most important. If you like the show, that's what keeps us on the air. And in exchange for your support, you get access to our EPP bonus episodes. What does that mean? It's a once-a-week episode that's released exclusively to supporters of the show, jam-packed with our best ghost stories. More than 300 of those episodes just waiting for you to binge away on. You also get advanced episodes of the show commercial-free, released to you weeks before they're released to the public. You get our audiobook and our ebook. That's a $30 value right there, all for $5 a month when you sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. That's what supports the program and keeps it on the air. And do press subscribe, whatever platform it is you are listening to us on. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hello.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hoping for more strange black masses in the field at night that I can't explain.
I miss that cow. I hate that he moved them to the north pasture. I want them back in the south pasture.
We had a cow, and have we talked about this on the air? Yeah. I know I've talked about it with Carol.
We have.
That if you've been listening, continued, what is it, two times, three times has escaped on our on our watch.
But she just likes to eat our field.
Yeah. And she gets out of the neighbor's pasture and then just kind of wanders around our field. But it's kind of creepy when you're out there and it's kind of foggy and there's just stars and moonlight. And then in the distance, there's this large black mass in the field. And if it's standing just right, it doesn't necessarily look like a cow. It's just like there's this weird, you know, absence of light. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of creepy and cool. And I enjoy taking the dogs out at like 11 o'clock at night. And then I see this out in the field. I love the creepiness of it. I'm not, you know, it's interesting because we don't go and investigate anything.
No.
We stay here and we tell the ghost stories. But I feel totally comfortable walking around my own property in a creepy setting. I'm fine walking through the fog. I'm fine walking out there at night. The only concern I would have would be a wild animal of some sort that has gotten, you know, nearby.
We get great creepy fog that just kind of comes and goes and comes and goes.
Yeah. I mean, just
we live like a quarter mile from a river. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of fog that kind of comes up the hill towards us, and it's great.
It rolls in, as they would say. And we can like sit there on the porch and watch the fog just slowly come up, and it kind of goes through us, and then it's clear again. Mm-hmm. And it's creepily wonderful. Yeah, I miss the cow. In the last week or so, he's had him in another pasture. I think he got sick of trying to round her up at night because she just kept escaping.
Well, no, you've got to move them back and forth when you have two smaller pastures like that. You've got to even it out as far as what they're eating.
Yeah.
But that's not the creepiest thing that's happened to you outside with the dogs taking them out to go potty.
Oh, you're right. So the other night, I'm out there in that scene I just described, foggy night. It's dark. Stars are out. Moon's out, but there's fog. And I'm taking Bear out to go potty. Bear's the smaller of the dogs. And I can see him. I can see him down the ways a little bit doing his business and just kind of, you know, sniffing around. And so I'm watching him and I'm just standing there. And all of a sudden I feel two paws on the back of my leg. And I'm somewhat not paying attention. So my mind immediately thinks, oh, he ran back and I just didn't see him run back. And now he's behind me saying he wants to go in the house. And I look up and I see Bear, our dog, down that way, about an acre. I'm like, oh, shit. And this is all happening in the course of like 0.5 seconds of I'm realizing what I just felt on me was not my dog.
And Sting was in the house.
Sting is in the house. Whatever is next to me right now that had the gumption to come up to me is not my dog. May not even be a dog. It it got close to me, whatever it was. And I turn around and it's another neighborhood dog named River. And he's a friendly little beagle. Mm-hmm. But he's normally at home at that hour. I think he was kind of lost.
River gets lost.
Yeah.
And he wanders. And he's a sweetheart. But I think he was just excited that he recognized your smell. And he's like, oh, I know where I'm now. They give me treats.
And I was like, hey, River, how are you? And he was fine. And I didn't freak out. But for a second, I'm like, oh, my God. Like, did a wild boar just find me? And now I'm going to lose an ankle.
You would have heard the boar. I was thinking raccoon came and put its paws on you.
Just like a rabid raccoon. Like, I got rabies, motherfucker. You better look out. That's how he talks. That's how the rabid raccoon talks. It was like, oh, shit. But then I brought Bear and Sting still had to go potty. And then I let Sting out. And then Sting scared River away. And I felt bad because I like River and I don't want. And Sting's very protective of the yard right now. And rightfully so, but he needs to learn who the friendly neighborhood dogs are.
Well, but he needs to send them home when it's 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. And he sent him home and, he was very protective of me and scared him away and just like, rawr, and then, you know, he ran home. So, but, for a moment it was like rabid raccoon motherfucker and, you know, and it's like, okay, could have come back in and that would have been a walker.
Oh,
could you imagine that?
Yeah,
I walk back in the
house. Have to deal with that.
Walk in the house and I'm foaming at the mouth. And honey, did you let the dogs out? I did, but I'm feeling really hot.
So if you have rabies, what do you do?
You go to the hospital immediately and get shots.
Okay, so I have to ride with your rabid ass to the hospital.
Yeah. Well, it's not like a zombie. I'm not going to, like, try and eat anybody. It would kill you before you ever did that.
Okay.
It'll deteriorate your brain.
Yeah.
And then you just basically have desire for, like, water.
Well, I know. I mean, I saw Old Yeller. I know how rabies works. But I didn't know how fast it works. So I didn't know if it's, like, a safe thing for me to take you to the hospital or I call an ambulance and they deal with it.
Or animal control. I thought he was like, call animal control for my husband. I think it's rabies. We just go to the emergency room and then they give you the shots. They do them in your stomach, I believe.
And hopefully you survive because not many people survive.
No, a lot of people survive. As long as you get they don't survive because they don't get the shots quick enough.
Oh.
Because they think, oh, it'll all be fine. But if you get treated immediately, you're good. Mm-hmm. There's only one person who has ever survived the rabies.
And it's like somebody from your hometown.
Without being treated.
And I've heard the story. It's like your claim to fame for Fond du Lac.
It is. It's one of the biggest, brightest spots on the shining star that is Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. We have the lone rabies survivor there. She was my neighbor. Literally lived across the street
from. So it could have been you that got bit by the bat.
Well, it's interesting because she was my neighbor till I was three, lived across the street. And then this happened at a school that was about 3 miles from my parents' house. And she was out there and for whatever reason picked a bat up that was on the ground. I think, you know, she was a teenage girl thinking, I'm going to save this animal. Mm-hmm. And it bit her. And the bat had rabies and she survived. They didn't realize it was rabid. I don't know why. I don't know the whole story of that part, but she did not get treatment immediately. And it wasn't, I think they didn't know that they had to, or they didn't realize that she was bit. And turned out she had rabies and survived it. So there you go. She's alive now today. I think she's a mom and, you know.
Did the kids then have an immunity to rabies?
That's a good question.
I don't mean that facetiously. No. I just mean if you survive rabies and you have those antibodies, do you pass those on to your children?
Well, you have the antibodies. I mean, our children aren't immune to chicken pox.
That's true.
You know, I don't
they have to get the vaccine.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's, but I wonder if she is immune to it now for the rest of her life, having survived it.
I wasn't trying to be mocking. I was just curious if that's how that worked. But you're right with the chicken pox, because we both had to suffer through chicken pox. Yeah. And then now they have a vaccine for kids.
Yeah. So I think that's how that works.
Okay.
But there you go. That's if you ever want to. They have a whole museum now in Fond du Lac. It's called the Rabies Museum.
They do not.
They put it in the old A&W.
They do.
And there's.
Do not.
The bat is in there and it's stuffed. And one wing is kind of broken off, but it's still, I'm kidding. That's kind of sound like a Fond du Lac museum though, doesn't it? The International Rabies Survivor Society.
That's great.
855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to show you real ghost stories with us. I just recently found your podcast as I really love the content. I have started listening since working from home due to COVID. Like you said, take your mind off what's happening. My family has a long line of sensitives, so many stories to tell, some good, some strange, some outright terrifying. One story that comes to mind occurred 12 years ago. My mother, son, and I were living in a townhouse on the outskirts of Houston, Texas. I came home late from work, and I was the only went home as my mom had taken my young son out to play with friends. I was waiting for them to come home for dinner, so I decided to watch a well-known ghost reality TV series that I liked. The episode was about the Hellfire Club. I got really into the episode when I sort of tuned out the show and started focusing on the background within the show, particularly the clothes on display in the Hellfire Club. A short while later, I had the most sickening feeling come over me, and I felt I was not alone. I do not know how to explain it, but I felt the presence of a man dressed in the same clothing from that show standing behind the chair in my living room, leering at me. I immediately turned off the show, but the presence remained. I tried to busy myself with other things, waiting on my family to return. They did, and my son mentioned he needed supplies for a school project, so I left by myself to pick them up. The presence decided to ride along with me in the back seat. I went into the store, and by the time I came out, it disappeared. Or so I thought. When I returned home, I felt its presence again. For the rest of the evening, I tried to ignore it, and of course, I told no one what I experienced. Later on, as I was preparing for bed, my son came into my room and asked if he could sleep in my bed that night, which was odd of him. I said yes. I was kind of creeped out. My mother is a night owl, so she usually stays up late. She used to work nights. It was a habit for her, so she stayed up watching TV. My room was next to the living room. The living room opened to the kitchen, and from there, a hall leading to a bathroom and the rest of the bedrooms. My son and I were in bed for about 20 minutes when I noticed something messing with items laid out on the nightstand next to me. It was pushing things around and rattling them, which I ignored. When I didn't respond, I felt it moving around the end of the bed and started messing with the covers at our feet. Whereupon my son asked me if it was me moving the covers and if I could stop. I said it was, and I was sorry. I had not moved a muscle. The next thing I knew, there was a large bang next to the bed on the side I was lying. The sound was so loud it echoed through the room. I looked over, and a box fan, which had been standing as normal as now, laid down on its face. It had never fallen on its own before, not to mention the floor was carpeted, and the sound it did, it would have had to have dropped from a large height. My mother came running into the room asking what that was and if we were hurt. It sounded like a car crashed into her. I said the fan had just fallen over and nothing more, brushing it off. She thought it was odd that it would be so loud for just falling over, but accepted my explanation and left. My son left it at that, too. Later that night, around 2 a.m., my mother came into my room and woke me up. She was spooked. She had gotten up to use the restroom. Our small dog accompanied her. While she was washing her hands, someone knocked on the door to the bathroom, and she asked them to just wait a moment. Knocked again, and our dog started growling. My mom opened the door, and no one was there. The hair on the back of her neck stood up, and she had this horrible, sick feeling come over her. My mom does not scare easily. She once stood up to robbers who had her at gunpoint. She said she was worried someone had broken in. Started looking all over the house, the windows, the doors were all locked. Nothing seemed out of place. That's when she woke me up. I then explained to her what happened earlier, and we proceeded to say prayers throughout the house till the feeling subsided. We never had that feeling come back. How that happened, I cannot explain, but I never let myself get drawn into a show like that again. I try to block myself off. I have many more experiences which I can share later. Thank you for listening.
There was a show where you had turned it on at one of our houses and the guy started speaking like he was possessed, like something was speaking through him on the show. And I made you turn it off because I was worried about that exact thing happening.
Yeah.
So I get it. I totally get it.
I just want to watch the rest of the Titanic episode of Ghost Adventures. We've only watched like half of it.
It scares me.
Maybe I'll watch it someday. But
you can always watch it by yourself. There's nothing saying that you can't watch it.
Except there's a wife.
I'm not going to watch it with you.
That if she walked into my office watching Ghost Adventures, might be like, stop watching that in this house.
You know what? That's probably not what I would say stop watching that in this house about. So I think you're safe to watch Ghost Adventures alone in your office with your door locked. It's other things that I would be worried about.
I have to watch The Conjuring 2 in my office with the doors locked. See, there is something.
Not watching that one.
That one I can't watch in the house. What about in the barn?
No, because then you're going to haunt my barn and my animals are going to get possessed and the cows are going to try and eat me. I don't want that.
That would be kind of fucked up.
And all the chickens will die.
What if we had to sacrifice a chicken to keep an entity at bay?
Then whichever chicken's the shittiest chicken is the one we'll sacrifice.
Hashtag shit Jenny says. Whichever chicken is the shittiest chicken. Was that a thing in the Bible, or was that a thing somewhere where like chickens were used as like the sacrificial item?
One with the Bible knowledge.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was like that and goats and things. That there was something. Oh, what was it? What is it where they painted the door frames in blood?
Passover?
Passover, yeah.
Goat's blood.
Goat's blood, yeah. I believe that.
All I know is what I watched when I was a little kid and Ten Commandments would come on Easter. That's the extent of my Bible knowledge, that and what they taught us about Noah's Ark.
I remember being in Sunday school, and then they give you little coloring sheets when you're like, you know, 5 or 6. And some of my favorite that I remember getting at the Lutheran Sunday school were drawing the scene of them painting the goat's blood and not having red. Like not having a red crayon and like having to ask, can I have a red crayon? What do you need? I need it for the goat's blood in this. Oh, okay. Here you go. This one will work good for the goat's blood.
Is it purple?
No, it was red eventually.
Okay.
But you had to ask around because everybody had a little bit of goat blood they had to draw on their picture. So, you know.
Everybody had to have a little goat blood.
And you needed red. So only one red colored pencil for the group. So we had to do that. And my other was not quite sure what color to draw the animated scene of Saul's wife turning into a pillar of salt as they ran away from Sodom and Gomorrah. And they said, if you look back, they said, don't look back no matter what. That was how the Bible verse went. And she looked back and her punishment was she turned into a pillar of salt. And all I'm thinking of is like salt licks that like they use for deer hunting. Cause yeah. that those are like just solid things of salt.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, is that, would she just be like white like salt or was, would it be kind of like a bluish, like what type of salt are we talking about here? Is it like, cause there's different
it's
colors
pink
of salt.
Himalayan salt. Pink Himalayan salt.
That's exactly what pink. So she turned kind of pinkish.
Pink. Yeah.
I'm glad you've.
I don't know. I have no idea.
That was the dilemma right there. What colored pencil do you use to draw Saul's now salted wife?
I went to church so infrequently as a child. What I learned was what I saw on TV. So.
I think if you found these 1970s, 1980s coloring books that they gave to kids, you'd have a fucking blast because they were hilarious. Like, I don't even think that I doubt that they would put these in there today of these scenes of horror. Here, have little Jimmy draw and color on this shit. I mean, I get it's Bible stories, but it's like, okay, let's draw the blood now. Like, I don't think that would be acceptable. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but. I don't think they're in the coloring books today.
Probably not.
They'd be fun to find at an antique store and go, oh, I remember coloring that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. What?
Nothing. You're just random. That's all.
Real ghost stories online. Let's go to our next one. It says, hi, I'm new to the podcast. I've decided to write in to tell you about two different stories. The first one, I was around 13. I was at a fly-in. Basically, a fly-in is a place where airplane enthusiasts can go to show off their airplanes, see air shows, and the like. During this fly-in, we were somewhere in Wisconsin. I do not remember the exact location anymore. It has been over 20 years.
I bet you I know where it was.
I'm going to guess Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and the EAA fly-in, which now for the first time in, I think, forever, has been canceled this year because of COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had like a sad one in Fond du Lac. It was like shortly after EAA.
Uh-huh.
And it was like the Fondy fly-in or something. And EAA is the biggest one in the world. It literally turns the Oshkosh airport into the busiest airport for a week in the world. That's how busy this fly-in is. So it is an event. If you're an airplane enthusiast, it is like fucking Mecca to go to this thing. But experimental airplane enthusiast. But
there's plenty of regular planes that go too. Yeah. I mean, it started as experimental, but it's expanded to all kinds of aircraft, old, new, everything.
I've seen the Concorde take off from there. I've seen when the Concorde flew. Mm-hmm. It's quite a show. I've seen the Harrier. I've seen all sorts of interesting things. I'm guessing that might be what it was. But the Fond du Lac one is like, we got like 30 planes and it's like the sad version of EAA.
Is that like the after party for the ones that don't want to go home?
I don't know. I just remember as a child, my dad was on the volunteer fire department and every year they had to have a tent near the runway just in case. And I remember sitting out in the tent waiting for a plane to crash.
Oh.
and as a child, it just sounds horrible. But you'd sit there and be like, well, that'd be exciting to see the fire truck get, you know, lit up and everybody going to the site and doing their job. Instead, it's just a bunch of, you know, 30-year-old guys drinking beer under a tent waiting for a plane to hit the ground.
That's terrible.
That's kind of what it was like.
Well, I mean, not the sitting around drinking beer waiting for, you know, an emergency that they may be needed for, but you sitting there hoping something happens just so that there's something to do.
That is horrible. As an adult, I would never hope that, but
You would.
The 6-year-old me was like, hey, exciting. Anyway, continuing on. It was such a large place that you could camp on site and camp or tent if you chose to. Yeah, this is EAA. I was with my grandparents camping in their RV at this event. It was such a large place that you either had to drive or you could take the shuttle to the other side of the grounds so you get to the flight line. Not sure what the word is to be able to see the planes parked on the tarmac. After we got the RV set up and decided to take a shuttle to the flight line, it hopped off the shuttle and was going to run to the other side to wait for my grandmother to get off the shuttle. I had to cross in front of the shuttle and across a lane of traffic. I decided to run across and wait for her. I, of course, had been taught to look both ways before crossing the road. This time, I did not think much about it and decided to make a run for it. What happened to me next cannot be explained. Some unseen force stopped me dead in my tracks and held me in place on the center line like something was holding me. The motorcycle zoomed past and it was like I was released from being held by the unseen force and I was able to continue running to the other side. After my grandmother got off the shuttle and came to the other side of the road, she held me and we both cried. From that day on, she said it was my guardian angel. From that day on, she always gave me guardian angel pins and the like, saying that the angel saved my life. My next story happened about a year after my grandparents had both died. I had many knickknacks and the like from their house. I'm an only child, and so is my dad. What happened cannot be explained by myself or my husband. There was a decoration item that was at my grandparents' house. It's a glass jar filled with colored pasta and bow tie on the top of the jar. Nothing of value, just something pretty to look at. Well, one weekend morning, my husband brought me the jar and asked me if I had moved it. Of course, I hadn't moved it. It was above my kitchen cabinets as a decoration out of the way of the toddler's hands. I have a 3-year-old, very curious child who is into everything. I'm a woman who's not 5 foot tall. The top of the cabinets are about 8 feet or higher in the air. What can't be explained is how it got off the top of the cabinets and 50 inches or more from where my husband had put it. It was not broken, so that, or 50 feet or more from where my husband had put it. It was not broken, so that means one of the cats could not have gotten up there and knocked it off. There's plenty of things that would have prevented the cats from getting up there. Only thing I can think of is maybe my grandmother was telling me that she's okay. I also have her grandfather clock. It was always about 10 minutes off. After her and her subsequent passing of my grandfather 4 months later, the clock was moved to my house. After he moved the clock to my house, my husband was taught how to wind it by lifting weights. You must do this once a week. After about a month of it being at my house, the mid-level weight would not drop, but the outside ones dropped. I wonder if my grandmother's spirit may have prevented the weight from dropping properly. I have not gotten it fixed yet, and now, and with the pandemic, the world is basically shut down. My grandmother was a deeply religious woman. I do not think she would try to haunt me, but maybe she's trying to leave me signs that she is okay. I was awfully close to her as I was her only grandchild, and I'm so happy that she was able to meet my daughter before she passed. I had my daughter in my 30s. I would say that she lived for her family. She was my favorite person on this planet, next to my husband and daughter. I have a blanket on my bed that was hers after putting it on my bed. I felt like I was enveloped in a hug every night when I was going to sleep. It's been about a year and a half now that she's been gone. I hope that I get more signs that she's okay. On a side note, both stories involve the same set of grandparents. Keep up the good work. I hope to hear my story on the air. Would love to hear your interpretations on both stories.
Grandfather clocks freak me out.
Really?
Yeah. And they make noise all the time. I hate that.
Yeah.
So.
Remember that, I think it was in Arkansas. It might have been Texas or Oklahoma. I'm not sure. There was this giant furniture store. I think it's like technically the biggest antique furniture store in the country.
Oh, it's here. It's in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And it's on the way to Little Rock.
Yeah. It's like off in the middle of nowhere, but it's warehouse after warehouse of antique furniture.
10 warehouses.
Crazy big. Just like insane. Doesn't end. And there was an area there where they had grandfather clocks. Do you remember that area?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not like that area?
No. No.
That whole place had vibes.
It did. Even you picked up on it.
Yeah.
It was fun to walk around, but I was like, okay, I'm not buying anything here. I'm sorry. Gotta go. Beautiful what? European antiques. I'm sure they just bring them over, you know, by the crate load.
Yeah.
But it was just insane, the amount. I'd never in my life seen that many antiques that old.
And it's all categorized by like room. Like here's armoires. Here's a, like literally a warehouse of antique armoires. Here's a warehouse of antique grandfather clocks.
And it's all furniture. So it's not like the junky stuff that you see, you know, it's not like booths that have the, you know, Beanie Babies and the McDonald's toys. Mm-hmm. These are old pieces of furniture, and that's it. And it was just nuts, the quantity.
What was the area of all of the stuff there? I and just to prove I'm not like, I'm going to write it on it, and I'm going to David Copperfield this shit.
Oh, boy.
I'm not predicting what you're going to say. I'm just writing down what was creepy enough for me. Just so you don't think I'm just like agreeing with you. I wrote it down.
Okay, which warehouse of what kind of furniture was the creepiest?
Of anything that they had there, what was the creepiest room that that gave you the worst vibes, or the one where you're like, all right, I want to get out of here?
The one that had all the kitchen tables.
Okay.
All the dining tables.
Why? Why that one? I would think that one would be more warm and friendly. Because
not every conversation at the kitchen table is a good thing.
That's true.
Especially back in, you know, 200, 300 years ago, the age of these antiques.
Yeah.
You know.
It wasn't warm and friendly all the time.
No. Somebody could have gotten shot at dinner, you know. I mean, stabbed. I mean, watch Outlander. You'll see what all kinds of shit can happen at a dinner table. So,
well, there you go. You answered that question very well. A plus.
Okay.
I guess.
I think I know what your answer is going to be.
I got it right here. It's behind this envelope. What is it?
The window room. Yeah.
Windows. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, the window room. Do I need this piece of paper for anything?
I don't know. There's probably a bill in that envelope.
Pest control. So, yeah.
You need to pay that one.
I think I did already, but I'll call him. anyway. there was a room, multiple rooms, multiple warehouses, where it was simply architectural piece windows from old mansions, old homes.
Churches.
Churches, stained glass, where God bless the people who said, let's get this stuff off of these buildings and not just knock it down with the rest of it, because this is history. Nobody makes things like this anymore. This is true craftsmanship. This is amazing stuff. And they did. And it's warehouse after warehouse of that stuff. Every type of stained glass you could imagine, and regular glass. And it was just, but they were all pieces of buildings. And I'm just wandering through there wondering, like, what did these buildings look like? Because some, you could tell, they were just, you know, historic mansions, the way that these windows were. And you're just thinking, my God, you know, this would be amazing. But at the same point, these were like pieces of the building. And to me, that's almost like, you know, not to say like everything had, every building and something horrible happened in it, but these buildings are around for quite some time.
Yeah.
In some rather questionable times in history, or very scary times in history. And you have to wonder, you know, it's like getting a piece of the Titanic and putting it into your house.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not exactly the same, but it's,
well,
you know.
Well, you don't know that it was a building where a bunch of people died, but.
Yeah.
There's a good chance that some sort of outbreak of something, people were housed there, tuberculosis, you know, who knows what.
Yeah, there's this, you just don't know. That was just a weird area.
I know, that one bugged you, but I was just looking at all these tables thinking, not all these tables had happy family dinners around them.
Mm-hmm. And that's what comes to my mind, loving food, is thinking, oh, there's a big turkey that sat on here
once. Yeah, no, a lot of these were probably pre-Thanksgiving
tables. Yeah. It's like, no, they use that actually to rest the dead on after, instead of a casket. And table was a table.
Table is a table.
And on that note, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air, become an extra podcast person, and EPP, sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Jenny, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.